Jaspreet Boparai and Don Nicholson with Greenwashed on RCR, Reality Check Radio.
Welcome back to Reality Check Radio, Greenwashed with Don and Jaspreet. And this morning we have back in the house Dr. Jacqueline Rowlith. She's an adjunct professor at Lincoln University and on the Board of Governance of DairyNZ Ravensdown and on the Dairy Industry New Zealand Board as well. And we have her here today in her, basically her private capacity, I might say, rather than representing any of those boards. And we love to have her back on. We had her on a year ago. We love her frank and open way she presents her case. And I sent her an email the other day and I said, what do you know about Joel Salatin, the American regen guy that we had on Reality Check Radio's breakfast show last week? And, you know, I sent her the link. I'm not sure whether you watched, listened to it, Jacqueline, but if you didn't, I'm sure his name is well known to you. What do you make of him? What do you make of him? And
Joel has a system that suits what he wants to do. And I would say if your starting point is the same as Joel's, if your goals are the same as Joel's, and if in fact the environment, which is more than the social license to operate, but also the temperature, soil type things are the same as Joel's, go for it. But for many farmers, they're not the same. And therefore, we have to be quite careful, very careful in my view, about interpreting the results of what he has achieved.
Right. So for listeners' benefit, what we're talking about here is what is being presented as regen ag, regenerative agriculture. Now, Jacqueline, I've searched the world for this. What is the definition of it? There doesn't appear to be one. No. What's your thoughts?
Well, that's people trying to do better and regenerate their soil. But in New Zealand, we really have very few areas of degenerated soil. So academics, such as I am, get a bit cross about the misuse of a word. You can't regenerate something if it hasn't been degenerated. Now, over in America, they have a lot of areas known colloquially as Dust Bowl, where they've been doing monoculture extractive harvesting through crops, just year on year of fundamentally maize or soybean or wheat, just taking out the nutrients. And you end up with the organic matter depleted because of the big gear, the big machinery that goes over it. And then you can say, well, if we bring in some animals, we'll be able to graze pasture. And it's the pasture that's the major thing because it's there for a while, not just a third of a year. And then with the big gear and the harvesting. And you can build up the organic matter again, as long as you've got the water and the nutrients to go in. And some of the exemplary work that are used as models for how you can build up the organic matter fail to comment that for every carbon you've got in the soil extra, you do need, every ton of carbon, you need about 100 kg of nitrogen. So marvelous statements from done in University of Florida and Georgia, that they've built up the soil organic matter by 8 tons of carbon a year. That's over 800 kilos of nitrogen. So skeptical people like me say, good heavens, where did that come from? Turns out it was apart from chicken manure and a certain amount of nitrogen in the grain that the animals were being fed, it was over 600 kgs of urea, of nitrogen as urea being put on. Well, shock, horror. We couldn't do that. No, not a good idea. They had irrigation as well. So they were managing the environment. But these sorts of things don't come out. And skeptical scientists, and I'm one of those, say, how would that work? Struggling to see. And then they do the investigation. So always when these lovely statements are being made, and they certainly feel good and it sounds all natural and we're going to regenerate the soil, notwithstanding the fact that New Zealand has beautiful soils, then we have to work out what they actually did and whether it would work here. Our starting point, having mentioned organic matter, is that carbon is about half the organic matter, about 58%. The world has maybe 45 tons of carbon to 60 centimeters. New Zealand and Australia's got about 30. New Zealand's got 100, 90, 100. Some places in Taranaki, 400. We're so high in soil organic matter. We should be hailing the fact, and our challenge is managing it rather than building it up. And New Zealand farmers manage it really well. And a lot of that's because we have pasture, not monocropping systems.
So it's like telling for us, considering how much carbon our soils have, it's like telling an Olympic athlete to, go even better and that sort of level of efficiency when you're already at that peak level. Where do you go from there? But that, Jacqueline, hasn't stopped outfits like Silverfern Farms that began this your farm assurance program 2021, outlining that, we want regenerative farming practices. But they described it that time. It said we have eight principles: reducing carbon footprint, improving soil health, improving biodiversity, water quality, animal health, having higher standards of animal welfare, and ensuring farmers and rural communities are nurtured and sustained. Now,
That
that
means
seems to
money.
be pretty, it's a matter of tick boxing, checking off we've done this pretty much just writing down what most of us have already been always doing.
Exactly right.
So,
Exactly.
and that's where this gets to me. We are not asking for anything more. We are just asking people to fill up yet another form. And if the whole country did it, we'd
Yes.
all be region, wouldn't we?
Well,
Most of us.
most of us certainly would. And they talk about reducing the amount of fertilizer that's added, but one has to say in hill country areas, nitrogen is not the biggest input. They certainly need to maintain the phosphorus levels in their soils, and some superphosphate or is probably the way they'll do it. But when you've got all those tick the boxes and you can meet most of them, absolutely, it's just the paperwork that becomes the issue. And quite a lot of what Silverfern Farms is doing is thinking about offsetting. So we're putting in more areas of gullies, maybe fencing them off. And that's not really reducing carbon footprint. It might be increasing biodiversity, but there's quite a lot of work that's out of the UK that says when you do the little woodlands, the areas at the corner of the paddock, or put in actual hedges, what you get is more of what you've already got rather than increased numbers of species, which is a bit disappointing for some of the people saying plant more hedges.
Oh,
But
so
what a
the set asides and the sort of bits around the hedges, like I think they do about 10 or 20 meters around their boundaries. That's not working for them. That
they
is
They get more of what they've already got
right. Gosh.
rather than suddenly getting in. They have introduced some, or at least encouraged back, some interesting iconic species, kites, for instance, the big birds. But in general, you get more of what you already have rather than the new things. And Britain, my home country, I lived there until I was 19, there's just gets in a muddle sometimes about what it's trying to achieve.
Yeah. But
Yeah,
so
and
seeing
that could
this,
have been the
Don.
case in the recent elections, perhaps. Who knows? Was that
Oh
just a
my
muddle?
God. Well, agriculture apparently does traditionally quite well under Labour, so it's going to be interesting to see. It's the food and beverage group that are really concerned. But the farmers and the deals, the trade deals, are they going to get protected or not protected? And for New Zealand, their protection issues are not the greatest for us.
No. Sorry, Jasprita, I interrupted.
No, but my question was just then why have we spent over 50 plus million pushing region here? When are we pushing an army of bureaucrats with clipboards and pens ticking off stuff? Because there's no efficiency to be had there. And in fact, as some of the statistics you were talking about, Jacqueline, off air, we might
They've
actually be reducing
decreased.
efficiency.
So then we get in a muddle about whether we're trying to achieve New Zealand's goals of reducing our total greenhouse gases for reasons of trade, or we're trying to meet what the customer says it wants, which is reduced impact effectively per mouthful. Have I got a low carbon meal on my plate? And so there we are. We've got great data supporting our beef, lamb, and dairy, saying that we're the lowest impact per mouthful in the world of the countries measured, but there are competitors and some of the others. So let's keep going with the we're really good. And that reflects is it 30 years or is it more of breeding? But it also reflects work since, frankly, 1935 about managing our pastures. And so the management of the pastures and the animals upon them is what gives us our great growth rates or production yields per animal, and therefore per kilo of whatever they're producing, but also maintains our soil organic matter, which has mostly increased since the original deforestation, because we've used fertilizer and put the animals on pasture. But then that becomes our methane issue because there weren't animal ruminants around before. And we get all sorts of muddle, circles within circles about what we're actually trying to achieve. And I'm an agricultural scientist. I want to feed the number of people around for least impact on the planet. And that's why I'm in New Zealand.
Well, and you know, that's fantastic. But, you know, the muddle and that we've created seems to almost have been by design. It's feeding a whole lot of people. I think that's where Jaspreet was going with the 50 million.
Yep.
And you know, going back to that, I've said many times, I don't care what you farm, where you farm, how you farm, just don't make it my business, and don't make it that you need some special rules for your type of farming.
Yes.
And so organic's got their own rules, and whether that's a noose or not, I don't mind. It's their business. But Regen has none, as I understand it.
None.
And would it be better or worse if they had an international set of standards?
Well, they'd end up being like organic, frankly, because the idea is that you're reducing chemical inputs whilst trying to maintain or improve soil biology, which is what they mean by soil health. But we've done a lot of work on New Zealand on soils and soil quality and making sure it's fit for purpose. And that's part of why we are so good. Matching in the issues about pasture species, and there's been quite a promotion, if you've got a hyper-diverse pasture, it'll be better for you. But there actually is no evidence at all, not in quality of milk or meat, not in production, certainly. So we go back to, what are we actually trying to achieve? And if we're trying to achieve least impact diets, New Zealand is well on the way, remembering that because we do high quality protein, which is the meat, the milk, we are feeding, for instance, with milk, feeding almost 0.9% of the global population its essential amino acids for less than 0.04% of the global greenhouse gases. That's a fabulous figure. I wish beef and lamb would do the same for them. We're really good at the essential amino acids that mean people can eat it and waste nothing. People forget about their personal impact through the sewage system. You've all had breakfast, haven't you? But nevertheless, it's real.
Yep.
Yeah, of course it is. And it's interesting. It's on that, in that sort of vein that triggered me to get you back on, because you wrote an article recently called The Pastoral Farming Ticks All the Boxes, Remains Far from Extinction. And, yeah, I've read the whole document, and, of course, it's full of great stuff. Simplifying it, you're saying that New Zealand just – it's what you're saying. New Zealand's doing things pretty well, but effectively we've got so many people saying we're not.
8%.
Would they get off it?
Yeah. 8% is the vocal minority. The data from Research First says 70% of people think New Zealand farming is good for New Zealand, and that farmers, different research, are doing a good job by the environment, far better, sorry, construction and industry and building. And they also think that they're doing a good job by their animals. So overall, 70% of people thinking, thank God for farming, because that's the economy. 22% are a bit concerned about something else. And 8% are the vocal minority. And yet the vocal minority are so vocal, they get coverage beyond their credibility.
Yeah. No hard questions there for them.
So thank you to Reality Check Radio and various other media outlets who keep doing the, really? Let's have a look at this. And so the article in Rural News, Sudesh Kisan, the new editor, wrote the headline. But this is because people say, keep telling me, oh, well, pastoral farming's going, you know, becoming extinct. No, you can't do anything else with that land that's sensible. Stop talking about plant-based protein. It's not high quality. A lot of it gets wasted through the sewage system. And actually, it wouldn't be good for our soils to be tilling them up, you know, putting the big gear, the machinery over it. It's not good for organic matter. It's not good for structure. And a lot of it would go in sediment. So don't do it. Leave it under pastoral agriculture, and we're meeting what the world says it wants.
And we're meeting with meat. So explain, part of that was talking about the iron content of meat.
It is so much of the world is actually deficient in iron. So they're anemic, not just girls and women of childbearing age, but actually men as well. So how can we get it through to people that you're best absorbable? Some of us are of an age to remember that wonderful platter where we saw these two plates contain the same amount of iron, and there was a plate with spinach on it and a plate with meat on it, and then the person picked up the spinach plate and brought it to the same plate, same place as the meat plate, and it turned out to be, you know, this big kilos of spinach required. So one of the things I note about lamb is that lamb and chicken are the least allergenic forms of protein in the world, and lamb has twice as much iron in it, as much as beef it has. And people, I don't, you know, we're not marketing it on that basis. Easy to digest, good with accessible iron, eat more lamb. Taste pure nature certainly is one of the things, but it's more than that. It's getting the natural iron into your body for all those people who are currently anemic. And though we see people say, oh, it's too expensive, we can't buy it, the premium markets are looking far more about taste and healthfulness and indeed convenience than they are about price. So let's keep going with the premium markets.
And yet we don't see stuff like that written in our trade deals, Jacqueline. We'll have stuff like anti-modern slavery or more rights for this or something else or Mataranga Maori and all of this. What
Just preach.
ever happened to the basic science and the basic fact that this is what it's delivering? Everything has suddenly become about carbon, methane, virtue signaling, the works.
And that is, it's a rich person's perspective to be on that side of things, but we can meet most of those as well. And that was with a double E, not an EA. We can do what is required, and there are the vocal minority trying tear us down, and on it's economic treason for them to be doing that. But how do we explain to them?
I almost feel like you need to go to in front of some of these MFAT negotiators, Jacqueline, and tell them this is
Oh,
what these lining
Vangelis,
people, you
we
know.
have actually,
Vangelis, yep, that one.
yes, and when we see him doing something that's actually does not reflect the truth, and we try and explain to him the reality. But yes, MFAT negotiations. I had the privilege of being over in Sri Lanka last year and talking to some of the people about the realities behind what we're doing and seeing some scales form from some eyes. And so hoping that, you know, the word will spread. We just keep playing with the straight bat. I hope you like that, Jaspreet.
Yes.
In the, we play with a straight bat and we say, this is the science. How can we help you?
Yep, cricket bats will do it for me. And I'm glad you mentioned this because I had what do I call it, the misfortune of sitting in a seminar with Vitalis Vangelis, one of our biggest MFAT trade negotiators, and him talking about on I think his talk was titled Everything to Gain. And he spoke about how we farmers need to do more because it's making his job very hard to sell a product anymore. And I was just sitting there shaking my head. Of course, these meetings are now these days so controlled that you can't just raise your hand and ask a question. They have to go through an app, they get sanitized, and my questions never made it. But it's galling. These people have made their money, their careers on the back of New Zealand ag, and there they go out there telling us that our credentials need to be better. Better than what, I ask? Better
Yeah,
than whose?
absolutely. Ours are fantastic. Our animal welfare, for instance, is greater than most of the rest of the world. And although they do talk about phosphorus and the concerns about Morocco, most companies are trying to look at other sources that are as good, whilst remembering that in Morocco, a lot of money is going into education and science scholarships in order to help areas that are less well developed than others.
And so we often, in this discussion, we've talked about New Zealand, and we use the term our, and then we use a term we. I mean, that's an issue for me. I quite often sort of get this dilemma going on in my brain that says, but you don't own anything, Jacqueline. You don't own my production system, but you're acting like you might want to, because that's the story that seems to come out from many players in the game. Look, to me, it's all about value capture. And if it's not value add, capturing a lot of value that can come back inside my door, my gate, then I'm not that interested. Of course, that's very self-serving, you might say, because there are people that do add value and they need to take their chunk of the pie as well. But it is, I do have a concern about, I remember there was an economist who used to be on the same farming show that you and I have often been on. And he used to call it about, he talked about trading under New Zealand dot ink. And I thought, what a great line. What a great line. And in the end, I have come full circle. I said, an awful line. It puts the straitjacket around my neck, me tighter than ever. And that's, I think, just, I mean, it's a long story, a long-winded way of saying we do seem to be constraining ourselves and making us want to be little clones of the state around how we farm. We just, it's a perhaps an old guy's view, just over it, perhaps. I
Oh,
don't know.
it's just the whole concept of tiny little New Zealand in comparison with the rest of the great big world and how we play on the global stage because of the trade deals is fundamentally with the Paris Agreement. And that's where the 80% of trade deals come from. And the Paris Agreement said we should be doing everything we can to reduce greenhouse gases, which we are, without compromising food production. And that aspect was not considered by the previous government to apply to anything but New Zealand. And because, it's only 5 million people and tiny little New Zealand, we should be more food secure than we are. So there's a muddle about that. That's a different time for talking. So going back, this government does believe the leakage concept, though the Climate Change Commission is challenging it because fungibility, that is, swapping out different ingredients could occur. But the trade deals, we need to be saying hand on heart, we're doing everything we can. And hence the 57 million on regenerative, that hasn't worked. Will there be anything in plantain? Possibly not. There's another over 22 million, I think. Can we go on to what really can we do? Well, here are the data that if we try and do what you say, remembering a build-up in organic matter also creates a build-up in that soil, the soil biology, and the soil biology is eating up the organic matter as fast as it arrives. So it's very difficult to go on building it up and therefore create that offset, which is fundamentally not a real one. So how well can we keep doing? We're going to be at stasis pretty soon. We've done everything we can, and let's not plant more trees on good food land because that's a cost, not an export income. And people are beginning to realize that that is the case in terms of what more can you really do. And so our goal, and my goal would be, should we be trading as New Zealand Inc? Well, Fonterra. The calculations are without Fonterra, the farmers would be 26% worse off in terms of their income. And I don't think they could afford to stay in business if that was the case anymore. So we always need to consider, just the same as with regenerative organic, what is the counterfactual? If we keep going as we are, will we be better or worse off? If we make the change, it's always about evaluation and looking at science.
Yeah, and so you in your article you also talk about the value of our exports, the receipts out of the primary sector. They're exemplary, but still it's not good enough for New Zealand dot ink. And that's where my sort of bone of contention is. Nothing's ever been good enough. We always want to be in this continual efficiency drive, which is fine. But
Farmers are competitive. They want to do
yes.
it too.
Yeah. But as Jaspreet sort of alluded, sometimes you do think that our, and we've had some fantastic trade negotiators, but do they trade our future away rather than hold us together? They seem to fall into line with the big global players, which bothers us a lot.
I think that sometimes the message that they give to other people is not quite the same as the one they give here. So if you were actually with our trade negotiators at the table on offshore, then you would be hearing a different story. And that is certainly what our ex-Prime Minister Jacinda Ardern and indeed Damien said they do. When they're back here, they're urging us to do ever better because they know other countries are catching up with some of the things we've achieved. Other countries do it with subsidies, and I think that bit is often overlooked. But nevertheless, here they're urging us to do better. And that's the importance of the scientific research and trying to stop people go down the wrong areas where we've already got data that will say, like the regenerative, it's not going to do what you think. We have a different starting point and we have different goals.
Right. Well, when you get to the end of a trade negotiation and you see the text, you wonder. Yeah, that language in there is unique to the mere mortals like me. I mean, how they get to that and create something out of it beats me, but they seem to have a technique that's foreign to me. But look, can we move on to your bone of contention at the moment? That is around science funding in this country. Oh, deep breath. Yeah, very frustrating. We had John Hickford on a few weeks ago talking about what is wrong with the science funding, but we, and when I think back, we really never got the recipe for the future. What's your bone of contention with it at the moment? It looks like there's going to be a diminishing of science funding in certain areas. Is it going somewhere else, or what is happening?
It's diminished full stop. Then there's been some redirection, and we see things like Rocket Lab or that sort of area getting funding, and just think, how is that? How is that our comparative advantage? What do you really think you're going to try and do by making it competitive? So I would always go back to say, what are we trying to achieve here? And how can we do the signals for workforce planning? Because that's the bit that often gets muddled up, and it's in agriculture with the paperwork that Jaspreet mentioned, and it's certainly to do with the science, sudden, yet again, more disruptions in science. If we value science, engineering, mathematics, technology, we have to be giving people good careers so that they can say to their children, this is a great place to be. And so I'd be starting on whatever is our comparative advantage, how are we going to make it competitive? And that will be through science and engineering, technology, those are mathematics. How can we send the signals? And that means giving the people in STEM, the four things, good careers so that they can be talking to others about it coming. And that means more funding. So Peter Gluckman, when he was quite early on in his component of being the Prime Minister's chief science advisor, said we should be looking at 0.8%. That this is when things start taking off for government funding, and we're nowhere near that. And it's gone down since then. Simon Upton said the same. He wanted to double science funding from the government so that he could have twice as many scientists. Great. Twice as many. And then he put us all on the competitive system. I was in the area then, which didn't go well. And that apparently was a link to Treasury about what they decided. But what we need is stable, significant funding. And so Peter said it should be more than the calculation of 0.8% because we're a tiny country. And furthermore, we're a tiny country that relies on what most people would call third world trade because it's in food. That's our comparative advantages, our environment, soils, good education for our farmers. Making that competitive requires very good research, and it can't be imported from other people because we're on grass and very few other places are. Ireland, tiny country with 5 million people or so, but it's very difficult to import the sort of science that we need, which is people growing up in beautiful New Zealand and understanding the real issues.
Yep. And so you're an enthusiastic advocate for, well, secondary school children especially to get into and then graduate into university and then do PhDs if they want to.
If they want, yeah.
If they want, they don't have to, but you know,
No,
if they
no.
just want to be in science, that's fine. But
Science.
we how do you so the layman's saying it's the blue sky science. How do you ever determine what quantum should be tossed into that pot? Because we don't know what's there. It's blue sky. We don't know what's there. We're chasing a rainbow, chasing a pot of gold, but we don't know how much to put in the pot.
No, and AgriZero is struggling with this at the moment. That's the big government thing, which does include some of the meat companies and the dairy companies, and indeed Ravensdown. And so they're trying to get the balance. I would be funding very good scientists, rather like the Max Planck Institutes over in Germany, very good scientists to go and, dream a bit or whatever. Very good scientists who also understand the practicalities and allow them to build their teams from blue sky back to soil quality. And then you start getting some real research. You get people allowing a certain amount of thinking time. Professor Ian Cornforth in the 90s said he was head of soils at Lincoln University, said the only person I ever see actually thinking in my department is the person on NASA funding. Everybody else was so busy trying to get competitive bids. And so all that competition actually, and a certain amount of fear about not getting it, ends up with people grasping at straws and then doing the convincing of government funders. And we see this a lot through sustainable farming fund is convincing, and let's just go back and check the reality of this. Check first principles, but you must have dreaming time. Richard Archer at Massey University, 2009, wrote a chapter in a book I edited called Future Food Farming, and he said we could be having animals without fences. Of course, you need the perimeter fenced, but everything else could be done by signals. 2016, Holter, Craig Piggott. Good heavens, there we are. Richard is a food technologist and he was just dreaming. And people said, "You're mad, mate." But there we are. People need time to dream.
Jacqueline, we are running out of time, but a last question from me. How does one then keep tabs on the money that what sort of value are we getting? The same thing, I go back to region, I go back to some of these climate change narratives. Once you are getting funding towards a certain aim, how do you ensure the credibility is there? Because I often, the cynic in me says, what you fund, you get more of. And
Yes.
some of what is being funded is what's also being inked in our free trade agreements and so on. So how do we ensure the credibility remains? Because I can tell you, my faith in science has gotten a bit shaky of late.
I can imagine that you need some skeptical scientists and some skeptical business people who actually are reading the literature and, doing checking out the macro environment, but also know the science from the past that are saying, yeah, how would that work? And nah, really struggling with this because it's based on a premise that is incorrect, or based on this paper, but look at these eight papers that said, nah, that's not going to be a happening thing. And so it's the independent groups that are actually science-based, and then the business people, and some of us go across both areas, saying, really struggling with that. And then you put in the milestones and you can say, this is the stop moment. And that hasn't been happening, partly because people have money and they're trying to spend it, and other people just want the money and they're chasing the dollar, not chasing the science. And that's terrible. So that's why we need to go back to the schools and say, this is how you make progress. You check the science, you look for the facts, the evidence, and the data, and you don't get persuaded by the emotional, passionate people because they might be wrong.
And that's a good place to leave this morning, Jacqueline. They might be wrong. Look, the element of doubt—it's always got to be there. So great, a great message, and great to have you back on RCR Greenwashed. Your passion for the ag sector, the primary sector, is palpable, and New Zealand needs more Jacqueline Ralphs. So Thank you for
Thank
coming
you.
back on our show.
Pleasure, anytime. Thank you.
Thanks, Jacqueline.
Right now, free speech is under heavy attack in New Zealand and overseas, with governments constantly devising new ways to enforce censorship. To make sure you never miss the critical news and breaking stories you rely on, join the RCR mailing list today. Get connected now at realitycheck.radio/email.